Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to another episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. This is Dirk and we are approaching weekend 43 this year, 2018. And we have Halloween right in front of us coming this next Wednesday. I know it's not a weekend program, but I thought you're ready to hear some scary stories. And I invited Missy Hermes from the Otter Tail Historical Society in Fergus Falls, and she will be with us here later on and speak about some scary stories from the area to prepare us for Halloween. So yeah, this weekend again, go to our website lakelifeweekend.com with latest updates. We have some stories and local events, anything you enjoy. It's deep fall, winter is in front of us. But it is nice out still, one of those days. It's actually a longer fall. Let's hope the snow stays away a few more weeks. And I actually wish you a good Halloween celebration with your children outside. Get some trick-or-treating done. And I know we have some events in the mall in Detroit Lakes. And also here in Perham, we have some events. And stay safe, enjoy, and get spooky. So I will turn this over to our interview part with Missy from the Historical Society of Otter Tail County. Thank you for tuning in, and check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. Welcome to our interview part. I'm here with Missy MS. Hello, Missy.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to be here today.
Yeah. So before we speak Halloween stories and spooky stuff from Otter Tail County and some history.
And all true.
And all true.
Right. We didn't make this up.
No. I like to introduce yourself a little bit and learn where you're from and what you actually do at the museum or the Historical Society, I should say. Mm-hmm. And just to fill in the blanks, I met you probably 4 weeks ago at a small program here in Perham. You had a reading at the local museum.
Correct.
About history of the names of the county.
The townships in the county. Yeah,
yes.
How the townships were named,
yeah.
Right.
We can speak a little bit about those programs also, but before we jump to a Historical Society, who is Missy?
Missy is the education coordinator for the Otter Tail County Historical Society, and I started working there in 1991 when the previous educator was going on maternity leave. And I had just moved here. I'm originally from Colorado.
Okay.
And I had done a tour with the United States Peace Corps, and I had been teaching English as a foreign language in high schools and in adult night school in N'Djamena, Chad. Mm-hmm. And my husband, I met him. He was working there for a petroleum exploration company. Mm-hmm. And he said that Minnesota was God's country. And it is in August, so I believed him, right? And I moved to, and he lived in Otter Tail County, although he's from Elbow Lake, Minnesota.
Okay.
And I was working on my master's degree in education, and I saw this job in the paper, and I thought that'd be great, just for maybe 6 months. And the educator at that time decided at the end of her maternity leave that she would like to stay home with her child. Okay. And so I came on full time.
Okay.
And
that was 1991,
right, correct.
Okay.
And so I've been there since then with just a small hiatus when I was raising my own children.
Okay.
And I have two boys. They're both in college now. And so that's me.
That's you. And we had Chris Schuke here last year speak about Phelps Mill. The museum in Otter Tail County in Fergus Falls. Can you just describe briefly, refresh our memories on what the mission, how big is it, and just briefly, where do you work?
The museum is located in Fergus Falls, but I don't want anyone to ever think it's the Fergus Falls Museum. It tells the history of Otter Tail County, which is the eighth biggest county in Minnesota, one of the largest.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, the Historical Society was formed in 1927, so it's also one of the older county historical societies. And Minnesota really has a tradition of historical societies, of wanting to tell their history, even before Minnesota was a state, when it was still a territory. The Minnesota Historical Society was formed.
I see that. We are really engaging to our roots and to
right.
our story. I can feel it. I mean,
it's important. People feel their history is important. Whether it's archaeology, you know, dating back thousands of years, or whether it's what's happening right now, people are collecting history, saving it, and that's our job too, to disseminate the history that's been collected starting, you know, way back, and to preserve it, and then really to promote it.
Now, that is the tricky part nowadays with, I think, it's challenging to find the right channels to keep the people engaged.
Right.
But what I learned personally is with maturing your adulthood, you also grow your interest in the past more than when you are maybe 15 or 25. It probably begins later than 35. And I guess your members or your audience sometimes is either very young or a little bit more middle-aged.
Right.
But the goal would be to find channels to, I don't know if you want to YouTube our exhibitions, but maybe that's something we should do.
And that's been an idea before.
Mm-hmm.
And I do engage on social media in terms of Twitter, but I don't find that people locally use Twitter a lot, but a lot of museum professionals, especially in the UK,
yeah.
do.
Okay.
And so we do have several Twitter accounts, and Facebook is popular, but again, that's a different age too. So
yep.
I try to make the programming, even if a teacher is the one requesting it, that it is engaging for students.
Mm-hmm.
There is there's an organization called Museum Hack. Have you heard of it?
No.
And it started in New York City, and Museum Hack were people that love museums, but they were bored with some of the museum tours.
Sure.
And so they started kind of an underground tour guide at the Museum of Modern Art in New
uh-huh.
York City.
Uh-huh.
And so they would kind of just spread the word. We're going to do let's say the women's history tour tonight, meet at this certain time. And they did this on their own.
Unofficial.
Now, right, unofficial, not as part of the regular scheduled
tours.
Just
a private person said, hey, you want to follow me? I'll tell you a little bit about.
Yes, and make it really interesting and somewhat edgy too. As maybe about, you know, how to relate it to what's happening in the world.
Sure.
And so this has taken off, and
they
are a company. I mean, they have a blog, and they go around training other music. How do you make your tours edgier to attract that millennial
sure.
or teenager that does like history but is not interested in this happened in 1837 and it was this George Washington.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something interesting. And so I've tried to do that as well.
Okay.
And make it engaging. And also because it's Otter Tail County, people want to hear about where they live. That's why that township program that you saw, I think, is good too, because people want to know what's happening or what happened where they live.
Sure.
Not necessarily the bigger picture of what happened in the United States, but what happened, it's happened here too. What's our microcosm? How did we get involved in Otter Tail County with World War I?
Yeah.
For example, that was the big exhibit we had last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your role then is to connect the program and the history or the exhibits to schools?
Yes.
Mainly?
So I'm not we have a curator of collections,
sure.
Kathy Ebbelbold. She creates and develops the exhibit.
Okay.
And then, yes, my job is to interpret that exhibit for the public, and whether it's bringing something out, like the program you saw
yeah.
at the museum here, or whether it is when a field trip of sixth graders come to the museum, how to help them interpret it
okay.
as well, make it
so
engaging
you give
for
tours
them.
Too?
I do, yes.
So
I'm in charge of tours as
okay.
well.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And just how many square? How big is the? I know it's a large museum actually. So you have several rooms. is a permanent collection, I believe.
Yes, also. we have gallery space that is permanent, mm-hmm. and then we have two different rooms where we have temporary exhibits, and one of them so is more. For example, the one now that is a major temporary exhibit is the exhibit about Otter Tail County's 150th anniversary.
Yeah.
A temporary exhibit that we have now that's traveling, and they change about every 6 weeks. Right now we have one called Why Treaties Matter, Self-Government in the Dakota and Ojibwe People. And this is an exhibit that we wrote a grant for and is going to other places in Minnesota. And it is about the Native American treaties in Minnesota. And then typically there's a lot of artists, whether they have photography or wood print, you know, they display at the museum,
so
too.
So the temporary ones change every 6 weeks?
Just about, yeah.
So roughly 8 openings a year?
Right.
Okay.
And so if somebody that's listening is interested in showing their art, they can always contact us.
And
we're
apply.
Always looking
okay.
For artists or, artists.
And they must be local? Most likely?
No,
okay.
They don't have to be, but mm-hmm. they're responsible for, and they can display it the way they want to. I think that's kind of a different, the way Kathy has allowed artists to put their own exhibit up the way they envision it instead of having a curator do that for them.
Sure, so they get the room and then they can prepare and then they kind of celebrate their own exhibition.
Yes, and if they want to have a reception, mm-hmm. they can do that too.
Mm,
one of the other missions that the historical has, and this is probably my favorite part about preparing programs, is our research library. We have a fantastic archives.
Really?
Where we have people from all over the world that come in to do research, whether it's somebody, maybe they were preparing a podcast, maybe they're writing a book, or they're doing their genealogy.
Ancestry.
And mm-hmm. we have genealogists that are looking, we have even reverse genealogy, people coming from Denmark or France to look up where did their family come to.
Go to, yeah, okay.
Right, and then we also have people that live here now or their family came from Norway and Sweden, moved to Otter Tail County. They are interested in that story as well. So we have both. We have thousands of photographs, newspapers, every newspaper that was ever published in Otter Tail County. And this was a publishing center, not only in English language papers, but also Finnish language and Norwegian language newspapers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So a great resource and a
yes.
great place. And there's three staff members then?
There are
Kathy, and Chris.
And Chris. So Chris is the director, mm-hmm. Kathy the curator. I'm the education coordinator. We have a full-time office manager. We have a bookkeeper. And then we have a research assistant because that research library is so fantastically busy.
It's much larger than one would expect, yeah? You're
right.
A pretty big organization
right.
there.
And we're open year-round.
Yeah.
Where a lot of historical societies in a smaller county, they just can't afford to do that.
Yeah.
Or they're all volunteer-run. We're really fortunate.
Yeah.
Nobody that works there is ever going to be a millionaire. I mean, we're
sure.
not. But we're fortunate in that we have support of the community, the county, and the different cities and township government that help make sure that the museum is open year-round.
Yeah. No, I must admit it's very good to know that there's passionate people that it's about greater things than just the
money.
Monetary feedback that doesn't make you happy anyways.
Right.
So.
Well, you're like you. We were talking about earlier, just the drive back and forth. I mean, I can get in my car. I'm going to do a school, do a school program. But I can stop at a cemetery on the way and take some pictures of the headstones there and be interested in that veteran that's buried there or that, like that the Purim Cemetery here has some fantastic stories. Maybe we should have done our program, a spooky Halloween program in the cemetery in Purim.
I don't know what it is with cemeteries. They don't attract me too much, but you are right. Cemeteries are...
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the difference between a cemetery and a graveyard?
I was just gonna. Probably a cemetery is a religious place and a graveyard is a non-domestic?
It's
the other way
reverse.
Around.
Graveyard is attached to a church and a cemetery. So Purim, has both of those things.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was on the right track.
You were. You and knew there was a difference.
Yeah,
there.
Thinking about the dead, I guess. And
yes.
Thinking about Halloween, you came with a big stack of paper.
I know. Now I'm hoping I can find something that we're going to really find interesting.
You can share, like, they are all true stories. So you have a lot of newspaper articles and things. So we have probably a mix of talking about it, and then you were going to read something. And this is like, what is this story that you
have?
Well,
this
here?
One is the Bluffton Ghost Farm. And Bluffton, not too far from here. We could drive over there right after this if we wanted to be scared. And today is a gloomy day outside, raining. And I don't know, maybe there's cobwebs in here, but I don't want to look too closely for that. But the Bluffton Ghost Farm story is one that we found in the Fergus Falls Daily Journal from 1936. So all of the stories that we have, really, they come from the newspaper. They were great about publishing that stuff.
1936.
Right, so right the middle of the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And I'll just read this. So, the disappearance of a man in Bluffton Township, the appearance of a ghost, and what appeared to be a basement grave were all investigated by Sheriff Hincus back in 1936. The sheriff had received a letter from Mrs. Joe Ertz of Bluffton asking him to make an investigation of some startling developments there on the northeastern border of Ottertail County. It seems that on the 4th of July in 1931, Mrs. Ertz's son Adolf had dropped from sight and nothing more was ever heard from him. He was last seen heading for a farm known as the Dumont Farm, a farm that by 1936, 5 years later, was occupied by an old widow named Debrun. You know, it seems like there's always an old widow in a lot of these stories, right? So old widow Debrun,
for movies.
Right, had been bothered by a ghost at the Dumont Farm. But she wasn't the only one spooked by spirits at the farm. Many of the neighbors of the Dumont Farm had reported on strange happenings there over the years. People saw and heard strange things, and they believed that the farm was haunted. It seems that in pioneer days, two people had been buried on the farm, and perhaps these two spirits were not yet at rest. Although many of the disturbances were minor, one day as Mrs. Debrun was walking around a straw stack, something struck her in the eye. She decided that something had to be done. In order to clear up the mysterious appearances and the strange visitations, Widow Debrun went to Brainerd and consulted with a spiritual medium. So with a, I don't know, is that an astrologer or like a...
Something like a palm reader or
Something like that. A living link between the physical world and the other world of the dead spirits or alive spirits. The spiritualist read the signs and told Mrs. Debrun that in the basement of her home she would find a grave, and that when the grave was uncovered, they would find the body of a man wrapped in a blanket.
What?
The wrapped body would be found at a depth of 6 feet under the earthen floor of the basement. On her return home, Mrs. Debrun had her sons begin to look for the secret grave. They excavated and they found some white and hard objects. Were they bones? The sheriff, Sheriff Hincus, said no. They were a bunch of old tree roots that had turned white. But what had caused them to turn white? And what about the grave? The sheriff and his deputy had only dug down 2.5 feet, not the 6 feet recommended by the spiritualist. And what had ever become of Adolf Ertz? Was that his grave? And is he still buried deep in the cellar of the Dumont farm? Did he have an unfortunate meeting that 4th of July night with the two undead pioneers buried on the Dumont farm? We'll never know.
It ends right there.
It does.
They didn't dig deeper?
No, why? I don't know. You'd think that they would.
Oh, my God.
And Mrs. Debrun, why not? Why didn't she have her own sons keep digging?
I don't understand.
No. She just maybe didn't want to know.
This is awesome book material or movie material.
I know, isn't it?
Yeah,
there's a lot of them.
That is really good. I wonder if this house still exists and if the owners know nowadays. They probably don't.
Well, you hope not.
Yeah, well, I hope they're not listening.
Right.
Maybe they are.
Well, you know, we even have some interesting artifacts at the museum that, well, I was telling you about Museum Hack and making up edgier.
Yeah.
So at one time we had some of these interesting artifacts on. One is a homemade saw that had been used to amputate the frostbitten toes of a man. And then another one is a scarifier, which was used often in New York Mills area by Finnish people to do a process called kupa. Now, kupa is, in English we'd say cupping. So it is, if you have pain, let's say in your shoulder, arms, or legs, you go in the sauna, and then there's a cup that will help, you know, it raises the skin a little bit, and then they cut with the scarifier. It has blades, and use something to draw out the blood. It's kind of like that
bleeding.
Old idea of your blood has, you know, humors, and that you have too much blood or what have you. So I was telling this to some kids. I'm going to make my tour edgy so that teenagers will love it. And I had a 12-year-old, as I'm talking about this process of kupa, poor kid, his eyes roll back in his head and he fainted dead away. So I've never told that story again. Not
yeah.
to little kids. That was my... Mm. He didn't get hurt. No children were hurt in the in the museum hack.
Don't do this at home.
No, right. Right. But...
Yeah, what did we find next?
You know, and sometimes we hear these stories. People call us and ask us. I mean, it's amazing some of the things people are interested in. One time I answered the phone. I was just the lucky person that day that happened to answer the phone. And it was a woman who said that her family owned a cabin, a lake cabin, on Lake Sewell. Mm-hmm. And that they were having problems with their cabin. And she said that when her mother was alive, they had noticed some strange things, but that it seemed like her mother's presence kept some of that tamped down. But her mother had passed away, and so now her family still owned this cabin, but it was her father living there, and the spirits that were bothering them were becoming more active. And she said that in the summertime, it would be... You know how it is in Otter Tail County in the summer. It can be 90 degrees, very humid. And she said the interior of their cabin, even on a day when it was very hot outside, they would be just chillingly cold, just freezing. You would have to wear all kinds of blankets and things or sweaters inside their cabin. And she wanted to know if we knew anything about that. And so we I asked her the location of her family's cabin on Lake Sewell. And then in looking at old plat maps, and this is something we have a lot of, too, old maps to see how the landscape has changed and so on, where her family's cabin is located had originally been a cemetery, a pioneer cemetery. And so I don't know if they had moved the bodies or they had just put their, bought lakeshore property, which is at a premium, and put the cabin there, but... we kind of figured, and they sold that. They couldn't stand it. It was that disturbing.
I would have, I don't know, having a home on an old, I don't know.
Well, that's like classic, right, poltergeist. And
poltergeist,
I just was reading that one of the guy who had, one of the actors from that movie had just passed away. I think he'd been in other haunted movie, Frankenstein and the Visitors from Outer Space, or I don't know what, but he passed away yesterday. So here we are talking about the same type of thing.
Yeah. What do you got there?
Well, this is about skeletons, and oftentimes today when a skeleton is found, it's not Adolf Ertz in the basement of Mrs. DeBrunn's cabin. Many times there's erosion by lake shore property, and because of where we're located, there are a lot of burial mounds for Native American people, ancient ones. So there's a process that goes for that too, but not all of the time is it necessarily Native American. And this is a story about a skeleton found near the city of Fergus Falls. And this is from 1959, so not as old as 1936, but it says, skeleton found near city believed to be diphtheria victim from the old pest house. And so Otter Tail County at one time had a place where people
quarantine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they had a poor farm. They had and places like this, but so
to isolate the illness, right?
Right.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it says the skeleton of a woman was unearthed west of Old Smoky, the city's ski hill, yesterday by men testing the area for gravel. It says Sheriff Bruberg was called to the scene by John Mark, whose company is exploring for gravel. The body was buried about six feet, and remnants of a casket were found. An infant's grave was partly uncovered by them, too. The ground was still ice frozen to enable men to retrieve it. Bruberg said he recovered a skull, bones, bits of wood, and handles from a casket. He also found a black ribbon, which had been in the woman's hair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you would think that they would have to keep track of burials there, but if it was the pest house, it could also have been similar to, not in that location, but, you know, a lot of people that, for example, the poor farm, there wasn't necessarily a marked grave. It's surprising that a family member wouldn't come back and claim that body and have it buried properly. And to bury it in gravel, like, I don't know, it's sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
It says that the police chief believed the graves were near the location of a pest house the city maintained years ago, and during a diphtheria epidemic, the victims were buried near the house. In recent years, the area where the graves were found had been a cornfield. That's another whole story, right? Children of the corn. But it's very muddy and difficult to get to. Yikes. Of course, we have pyromaniacs in the 1930s, too. You know, people going around, pranks, Halloween pranks. People back then would turn over people's outhouses, and kids would light fires and things like that and get in trouble. Yeah.
That's a true Halloween time?
Right? It says a crew of hoodlums. This is from 1946, so right after World War II. A crew of hoodlums in a car got some excitement or satisfaction out of 6 or 7 feet of hydrants and seeing the water gush down the street. That's terrible. The trick-or-treat children added another thrill this year. Many carried bags that were filled with goodies by curfew time. Many of these youngsters wore masks or were painted up beyond recognition. Then there was the usual soaping of windows, but some miscreants with a sense of smell and perhaps a bent for surgery had deposited a scent bag from a skunk in a paper bag near the intersection of Union and Lincoln, and the first car that ran over it created a stifling odor in the neighborhood. Police threw the bag in the river and poured gasoline on the spot where it had been crushed. I'd never heard of that as a way of treating things. Oh my gosh, yuck.
Try to burn it away.
Moving of heavy items of property, a favorite sport on Halloween nights years ago, seems to have been abandoned in past years. Modern youth has found that these time-honored pranks entail entirely too much work. No one cares to work much in this day and age, and no group of boys is energetic enough to haul an automobile or truck chassis onto a roof. 30 or 40 years ago, a lumber wagon astride the hip roof of a barn was not an uncommon sight the day after Halloween.
So tell us about this history. So now I never heard really of the pranks. I know trick or treat, so I can pay myself out of getting tricked, right? I mean, that's the concept. And
right.
If I have been like a disturbing neighbor throughout the year, I'm getting a prank played. So my car has ended up on the house roof.
Right, things like that.
That's what happened?
Right, or they would pick up a vehicle and put it into the middle of an intersection so no one could get around it. I mean, just
stuff like that.
And then turning over people's outhouses, well, that's going to create a smell as well, like the skunk, but also a huge mess. Hopefully nobody's inside the outhouse when you're doing that, right? Yuck.
So I did not know that.
Yeah. Hmm. Tricks.
Right, I guess. I should try that out again. We should have a renaissance of the tricks.
Well, and you know, when I was in high school, that was something that the senior class might do, a trick like that. Like, I think it probably happened locally where they would find like a Volkswagen Beetle and then put it inside of the school hall. And I don't know if they would take it apart and then put it back together inside the hallways and let the administration of the school figure out a way to get it back out. Yeah. Pranks, right?
Nice. Where are the ghosts?
Ghosts? Well...
Or murders, bad murders.
Well, yeah, there are murders. And we have had a lot of them in Otter Tail County. Mm. And it kind of reminds me, if you've seen the movie, I know it's like, oh, everybody talks about the good old days,
yeah.
Right?
It
but
was nasty
no, there was plenty
brutal.
Bad things back then, too. And one of them is a murder that was committed near Parker's Prairie. And it was a man named Ruckheim, and it kind of reminds me of that Here's Johnny from the movie. What is that movie about the hotel? It's a Stephen King book. The Shining.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And he
I don't
starts
like horror
to,
movies.
That's not my kind of movie either, like the new Halloween movie. That's not my thing. But this Mr. Ruckheim was starting, he was hearing voices. And when you're isolated out, like some of these farms are, if you're 160-acre homestead, is probably then the next neighbor is that many miles away too. You've got such a distance. Mm. It often creates isolation, loneliness,
sure.
Depression. People are self-medicating with drugs and alcohol back then, not just today. And so then, if you have a mental illness and there's no treatment for you, then
you hear voices.
Right. It's possible.
Sure.
And so this Ruckheim, in the middle of the night, got up, went to his barn, got his axe, or went out to the where he had chopped his wood, came back in the house and killed his wife and four children, went back out to the barn and started to kill his cattle. The voice was even telling him to kill his livestock. And then... and then he got so tired, I guess he fell asleep. And I don't know how exactly neighbors must have come to check on them. And
there was this big bloodbath.
Yeah, he was everywhere. And they, what happened? Well, he said he had heard voices. And he was sent to, he murdered his wife and children in the town of Effington. And that was in 1910, I guess.
Ugh.
And he was sentenced to state prison for life. And since going to prison, he has manifested unquestionable signs of insanity, and the warden does not consider it safe to permit him to work with other prisoners even. So even in a place like Stillwater, which had some scary type criminals down there, they thought he was too dangerous to be in with the general population.
So he lost it.
Yeah. And he would be sent to an insane hospital, but for the fact that the hospitals have no place to keep insane people of this character. So he was so...
kind of lock him up.
Right.
There was more hospital, I guess, than...
The problem with that is we know today that somebody who's kept in isolation like that, solitary confinement, that does not help your psyche either. That you actually maybe get worse. And so that probably wasn't helping him that he was kept in solitary confinement and didn't have contact with other people. And they probably didn't have psychiatrists or, psychotropic drugs or anything like that to help him. And so...
Yeah, we're opening another topic here where, I went to law school and I listened to criminology classes, obviously, and those people, despite the fact that they harm all of us and are bad, but they're also victims if they really lose psych. I mean, they need help and treatment because they're human, so it's a sad story in a way. Very sad,
It
actually.
Is sad because who knows why he did that. And
yeah.
And that's the question that we in education are being at our are supposed to think of now, not why did that person do that, but what happened to that person before to get them to a place where that happened. It's who knows. Here's an interesting story. Now we have two different stories regarding pigs that feature in Spooky Stories of Otter Tail County.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an interesting one. Pigs attack woman in town of Pine Lake, so very close to here where we are right now. This is from 1929. And it says, Mrs. Weiss of Pine Lake Township was attacked by pigs and seriously injured. She picked up one of a litter to carry it into a barn. So just a piglet.
Mm-hmm.
Look how cute. And was attacked by several older pigs when the little pig squealed. She was thrown to the ground and bitten severely. Her life was saved by members of her family who came in response to her cries from help. And apparently they were just here visiting relatives. They were just here from Germany visiting relatives at that time. So I don't know.
What? No.
But
pig attack.
Pig attack. Yeah, that really sounds horrible, doesn't it? But the probably the most famous scary story from Ottertail County is the pig farm murder.
Okay.
And if there's anyone who from a high school, I mean, this is the story people know vaguely. They've heard of this story of Ottertail County, and it is in books. And family members are still alive. And so there's sometimes controversy about whether this is a story that should be told. And the people that own the farm where this incident took place, they don't want people visiting there. This is the time of the year when people will go.
The farm still exists?
Yes, the farm still exists. And people often like to go out there in their cars. People have told us, I mean, I have heard many stories of they went out there to see this farm and they saw a woman dressed in white, or they drove out to this farm and at night and suddenly all of the lights turned off in their car and it was completely pitch black. People tell stories of going out to this farm and hearing pigs squealing. So
what's the story?
The story is about a young girl named Lily Field. And Lily and her family lived in St. Olaf Township. So that's closer to the southern part of the county.
When?
I will find that.
Oh, okay.
So Lily's father, sadly, had committed suicide himself the previous year. But Lily was a teenager, about 15, and she had a younger brother. And then she had an older brother, and her older brother was helping her mother to continue the farm. And one day, Lily's brother, older brother and mother decided to go take the wagon to Fergus Falls, and they left Lily at home. And we even have a letter written by a woman who was friends with Lily, and Lily told her, "I'm going to stay home tomorrow. I'm not coming to school because I needed to stay home with my little brother."
Mm.
So they also had on the farm a hired man whose name was Nels Holong. And Nels was an immigrant from Norway. So Lily's mother and older brother go to town. They leave her there with her brother. And apparently the hired man told the little brother, "I have this shovel. Can you take it to the neighbor's house?" And then the little boy was out of the way, and the hired man came into the kitchen where Lily was either cooking or washing dishes. And what he said is he asked her for coffee, and she refused him. Now, I know a lot of people get upset when they don't get their coffee, but this, he took it to really an extreme. And what probably happened is he probably made advances on her. And he ended up killing her. And he didn't just kill her, but he took a knife and he cut her throat. And then he also cut down really from her neck all the way down. And then took her body out to the pig pen and threw her remains in there, in the pig pen.
To eat it.
Yeah.
They eat it.
They did, yeah. Partially. So then he ran away. And that later on, late that, you know, the evening, the little brother came back. He'd been playing at his friend's house. He had returned that shovel. And he noticed that there was, you know, he couldn't find his sister. I don't think he noticed there was anything amiss. And he fell asleep. And then it was dark when the older brother and mother returned too. And they also noticed, well, it was dark. But they, you know, would see to everything in the morning. In the morning, when the brother got up to do chores, he noticed that none of the things he had asked Nels, the hired man, to do had been done. And also, Nels was nowhere to be found. And then when he went, I guess he had gone out to feed the pigs, maybe, and discovered the remains of his sister. Yeah. And so he, I think he took her out and covered her. And then he went to raise the alarm of the neighbors. And there was a large, large search all over the area, because he was probably on foot at that time, Nels Holong. And I think he was discovered near Wendell.
Oh, they found him.
They did. And he had blood on his clothing. I mean, and there was a trial and in Fergus Falls. And he was sentenced to be hanged. Yeah. Yeah. And the sheriff at that time went to find out how to make a proper noose for an execution like that. And that was...
was in 1890?
Yeah, it was around there, yeah.
Oh.
I'll find it.
That sounds like the Wild Wild West.
I don't want to make it up or tell you a bad date. That's not me. But anyway, it's that story has really taken on a life of its own. And a lot of people come into the museum, teenagers that maybe would never do research on a paper for their history class, they will come in to read the actual newspaper articles that describe that time. And it's quite interesting that this Nels Holong, I think his birthday, I want to make sure I have it right, I think his birthday is October 31st.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, and then people are still attracted, go there, and then
right.
spooky things happen afterwards. Yeah.
Right.
So there is like a
And so people,
spirit.
And, right, there is. She's not at rest. That's
She's
kind
not
of
at
the
rest.
Idea. She's not.
Maybe he's not at rest either.
That could be.
Maybe there was a ghost that
it could
maybe
be.
He heard voices.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Right. Well, he didn't say that. He kind of tried to defend himself that he'd been kicked in the head by a horse. Again, you know, trying to find a reason of insanity type. I think he had a sister that tried to defend that too. That he had something bad had happened to him, or as a child, or that, like I say, he had been kicked in the head by a horse, and yeah, it's horrible. Anyway,
yeah.
The poor girl, just a young girl like
Absolutely.
That, to have that experience. And then her brother, to have that in such a short time, to
yeah.
have one parent commit suicide, and then to have another relative that's murdered, brutally
yeah,
murdered.
Traumatized.
Yeah.
Traumatized.
Yeah.
So, yeah, these are not
it.
Funny stories. They're
no, they're not. And we have stories of UFOs, too. I mean, people kind of think of aliens at the... Halloween as well, and we have those
oh, really?
Stories as well. Yeah,
I did not know.
Yeah, and a lot
Maybe
of
somebody's
them
coming
to get us,
oh.
take us away,
of course.
Do some experiments on us.
They probably already do.
Right. So, and Purim often there have been many people
you
that say that they were taken.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Is it a tradition here in Purim?
No, I don't think it's a tradition. But even way back, I mean, I'm trying to find it. But there, in the 1930s, again,
fun.
There were a lot of people that were. We had game wardens that were making sure people weren't poaching out of season. Of course, it's the
sure.
Depression, so people are trying to feed their families.
Sure.
And so they were out. This is near Henning, and they went to a field. They were going to make sure that there were people not doing it at night, where they would shine the light so that stuns the deer. And then, but they said that as these two game wardens, as they were sitting by this field, they saw this shining disc that was floating over, and it was amazing to
Maybe
them.
Maybe they had some moonshine.
Well, it could
attending
be.
Them. While they were waiting.
Now, these guys, I would never say that.
No, I shouldn't
right?
say it, but maybe.
It's possible,
possible.
Right? Yeah.
So, I shouldn't make fun. Maybe they take me next.
That's right. You might be next.
I might be next.
We wouldn't want that to happen.
I don't want that to happen. Maybe it's cool.
I've heard too. maybe. I don't know. Maybe too. We have had a lot of stories back in the day of wolves.
werewolves,
right? Well, maybe. Back in the 1920s, there was a man who was out hunting. So this time of the year, right? He was with his dog, and his dog. They were out near hunting near the state hospital in Fergus Falls. There's a there's quite a large area, but there's also some woods there. Mm-hmm. And the dog came back with a leg. Yeah. And it had a shoe on it too. And so, of course, they had to call the sheriff. Why is, and it looked like it had been partially gnawed. And they thought, well, maybe
a wolf attacked a
pedestrian. Or it was a werewolf, don't you think?
Possibly.
No, yeah.
Those things may exist.
I should, I think this is it. Okay, 1887. That's when the pig farm murder took place.
1890, I was 1887, close.
Yeah. It was in May of 1887.
Well, I think we have a lot of spooky, true nightmare, sleepless nightmare stories. And I think maybe we will do a continuous program about highlighting some local history.
I love that.
So we could create a program or tune into your educational program that you already do and capture that and then in the future. I think there was a lot of Halloween. It got me a little bit excited too. I am not so sure if I will play this to my 9-year-old son, but maybe I will. But
we usually
ask a lot
say
of
when kids, because we tell these stories at the museum too on the Friday before Halloween.
Yeah,
and we kind of have a like a 12 years old is the kind of the cutoff point. Now some parents decide for themselves, but for me, I
cut off like younger or older than 12.
12 and older.
That's what I mean. Like
Nine? No, I don't. Yeah. I don't think so.
Well, I thank you very much for coming and sharing those details. I wish you a happy Halloween.
Thank you. Same to you.
Thank you. And have a great weekend.
Maybe hopefully we get sleep tonight. We won't be so scared. We have nightmares.
I know. Thank you.
Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.